Yes, Dick Bentley and Jimmy Edwards will be on hand for the next 30 minutes. With Wallace Eaton, Al McCogan, June Whitfield, and Eno, all inviting you to...
Now, you see the difficulties, don't you, Bentley?
What, Jimmy?
Well, you see, I want to ask June Whitfield to my farm for the weekend. She can't very well come down, you see, if I'm living there alone. One has to think of these things.
I never think of anything else.
Yes, it is a snag, isn't it, Jim? What you need is what the French call a chaperone and the Spanish call a duenna.
And the English call a perishing nuisance.
Not necessarily, Jimmy. All you've got to do is find some motherly old body who can sit in the corner and knit.
Oh, would you, Bentley? Would you really?
No.
Thank you very much.
Not me. No, I was thinking of somebody like, well, haven't you got a housekeeper?
She's left.
Oh, it doesn't matter about her politics. As long as she can be present all the time,
no, Bentley, Bentley, I meant to say my housekeeper has gone.
Gone. Yes.
You see, if June can come to the farm, she'll see me as I really am. Not the radio Jim loved by so many. It'll be Jim the farmer.
Jim the farmer.
The earthy Jim. Plodding his way through the muck.
I've just had a wonderful idea for a chaperone. Alma?
Yes, Dick?
Alma, how would you like to spend a couple of days on Jimmy's farm?
Oh, that would be wonderful. I'd love it.
Oh, okay. Well, now get the 7-5 from Victoria next Friday. That's a good girl.
There you go, Jim.
It's worked out beautifully. Alma will be at your farm next weekend.
You are a clot, Bentley. Next weekend's no good for me. I've got to stay in town next weekend, and so has June.
Well?
Well, where has it worked out beautifully?
I haven't got to stay in town.
Treachery! Oh, no, you don't! She's mine!
Your chip? I've just been along to my shipbuilders to order myself a new steam yacht. The old one got wet.
Well, it's filthily wealthy, Wal. Can anybody get to be as rich as you are, Wal?
Of course they can, Jim. It's just a question of getting in at the right moment.
Oh, yeah.
You take some of my equally wealthy oppos. One pal of mine started life as a salesman. Greek gentleman called Mr. Oppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadoppadopp
had an idea. He invented one of them nighttime milk drinks flavoured with malt.
We know the brew.
Then he ran a smashing advertisement, see, all about a boxer who kept getting knocked out because he wasn't getting the right layer of sleep. Then a boxer drinks his drink. The very next fight, goes right in the ring, and wallop.
What?
Got knocked out again.
But why?
The other boxer had been drinking it and all.
And your friend became a rich man from that?
Rich man? He's a multi-millionaire. Hey, want to buy some shares in his stuff, Jim?
Sorry, Walt. The whole story rather smacks of fibbery. And we have a high regard for truth, haven't we, Donald?
Oh, yes, sir, yes. In fact, we're starting a campaign for more truth in radio. There's altogether too much polite glossing over. Take fashion parades, for example. Now, how much more value they'd have if the BBC commentator told the truth?
Now here, to show off Chagrin's new cocktail line is Drusilla, who only got the job because Zoe Newton's on her honeymoon. This is a simple, almost severe gown, worth every penny of 12 guineas. The price is 45. Now here comes Barbara, dressed for the country by Keith of Mayfair. It's long been said that it is impossible to go wrong with a tailored two-piece in a good tweed. Well, Keith of Mayfair has done it. Now, as Bob returns, here's a surprise. The back is even worse. Barbara goes off, and now we wait for the big moment of the collection. Davini has created a ball gown, which he promises is his most daring yet. And here is Dolores in the ball. Oh, no. Look at it. Oh, no. Sorry, I really will have to return you to the studio. Oh, get her.
Our other example is In Town Tonight. There's interviews with visiting show business celebrities. Let's have the interviewer giving the listeners a glimpse of the truth.
Arrived in London today to top the bill at the Leading Theatre comes America's number one singer of popular songs, Larry Roscoe.
Welcome to London, Mr. Roscoe. And I think I'd like to tell listeners he looks... about 20 years older than he does in his photographs.
May I say what a great thrill it is to be here in your great city?
You may. Mm-hmm. Oh, I should think at 2,000 nicker a week, it'd obviously be a great thrill to be anywhere.
Yeah, it was a great trip.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
And that was really some reception I got at Heathrow Airfield, huh? All those people swarming around me, ripping my clothes off. Would they be English teenagers?
Well, probably English tailors. Mr. Roscoe, is there anything further you care to say before we start advertising exactly which theater and when you're appearing at?
Just want to say thank you to all the swell kids of the Larry Roscoe fan club. And is there a better way of showing my gratitude to the British public than by singing Candlestick Serenade?
Yes, it is, by not singing Candlestick Serenade. Hurry on, London!
Tight talking point. But it's again we meet the ground. Our family of ordinary people meeting life vicissitude. Today their talking point is, how do you spell vicissitude? So, over to the ground.
Oh, Ron. It just doesn't seem possible you're really emigrating. Only another 5 minutes and you'll be off on your way to the boat. Oh, I just can't believe it's happening. Can you really be going to Australia, Ron?
Yes. That's what it says on the label Dad tied to my lapel. See, Ronald Glum. Please put him off at Australia.
My empire builder.
Yeah.
Oh, but it may be years before we see each other again. Write to me, Ron. Please write to me.
Right, Oweth. I'll get me pencil and I'll start by...
No, not now, Ron. When we're apart.
Yes.
Oh, Ron, I'm just looking at you, filling my eyes with you. I want something to remember you by.
Right, Owe. Just a kiss.
Because I'll have to... I didn't mean that. You crease your label.
I must have a kiss.
Hello, hello, hello. All right, Ron, never mind the bird in the hand. There'll be two in the bush. Well, now, my son, time to go, lad. I've loaded your luggage on the back of Ted's van, so hop aboard. And don't sit on your mat, because the marmalade sandwiches are in the pocket. And try and save the apple till Cape Town.
Right-o, Dad.
Well, go on, ta-ta.
Oh, no, Mr. Glum. Don't push him out like that. He's your only son. At least give him your blessing.
Please allow me. If I do seem a bit gruff, it's only because I'm trying to hold my feelings in. As the saying goes, it's not an easy moment for a father who loves his son as dearly as what I love my darling Ron.
Well, my Dad...
Will you shut your big mouth while I'm talking?
I'll miss the boat, Dad. Goodbye, Eff.
Oh, Ron.
Goodbye, Dad.
Oh, get up.
I'll try to be worthy of the name of Glum. And I'll keep on with the stewed prunes. Goodbye.
Oh, don't. Oh, Mr. Glum.
There. Tears won't bring him back. Do you know, I'm proud of that lad. Proud, as they say. That last glimpse of him, he looked a real merchant adventurer. Standing there, clutching his painting book and his seasick pills. Let's have a look through the window. Oh, yes, he is off. You can see him in the back of the van, perched on top of the luggage. There he goes.
Is he waving?
No, he's eating his marmalade sandwiches.
I told you to save them till you got a float, you eat. Oh!
No use, he's gone round the corner. And his mum was up at 6 this morning cutting them... Oh, Lummy.
What, Mr. Glum?
His mum. I promised to give her a shot so she could say goodbye to him.
Oh.
Mother!
You know, I promised to give you a shot when Ron went. Dad. Well, he's gone.
Now, what do you suppose has upset her?
Glamour, I don't think you realize.
I'll tell you this, Eth. Ron will have a job getting to that boat in time unless old Ted keeps his foot down.
Oh.
Hello, there's the phone. That'll be the manager of the labor exchange. He seemed awfully anxious to make sure Ron would really go. Hello!
Hello, Dad.
Ron! It's Ronnie!
Oh. Hello, Ron. Oh, you are thoughtful. You phoning from your cabin?
No, Eph. I'm in the phone box round the corner.
But aren't you on your way to Australia?
No, Dad.
Why not, Ron?
I fell off the van.
How would you like to be by the sea with me? Oh, what I'd give for a moment or two under the bridges of Paris with you. Darling, I'd hold you tight, far from the eyes of night. Under the bridges of Paris with you, I'd make your dreams come true. My darling, why I sing this song is explain. It tells what happens all along the bridges of the Seine.
The vagabonds go there at night to sleep all their troubles away. But when the moon is shining bright, my heart wants to sing it this way.
Les ponts de Paris, lorsque descend la nuit, sort de gueux faufile en cachette et sont te retrouver une couchette. Darling, I'd hold you tight, far from the eyes of night. under the bridges of Paris with you, I'd make your dreams come true. I'd make your dreams come true.
Waiter, three more brandies and soda, please. They say, Edward, you're a knowledgeable chap. What's the meaning of oratorio?
Oratorio, is all greasy? Well, oratorio comes from the Latin torus, the bull.
Yes.
Therefore, oratorio, orable. By the way, what's your interest in oratorios, Your Grace?
We're the House of Lords. Choral Society's doing Hiawatha. Do you know anything about Hiawatha?
Oh, yes, yes. I've read the poem.
Oh, stout fellow.
No, long fellow. But if you really want to know about Hiawatha, Your Grace,
yeah,
we'll have to take you back to a long-ago Red Indian powwow. Young Hiawatha was being initiated as a brave by the chief of the Kippafoot tribe, Sitting Jim.
Redskin brothers, Sitting Jim, the tribal gaffer, Sitting Jim, the red man headman, all belt up for Sitting Jim. Right, almighty warriors of the Kippafoot tribe, here where the flames of the campfire throw leaping shadows on our wigwams, we are met to welcome to man. We are met to welcome to manhood a fully paid up brave. Stand forward, 1615-338, Hiawatha.
Here I stand, O mighty chieftain, waiting for an initiation so that I can ride the war path, paint my face with white distemper, stick a feather...
All right, all right, all right.
All you were supposed to say was yes, sir. And put your headdress on properly, you look like a shuttlecock. Have you the courage to undergo the tests of manhood?
Fleet of foot is Hiawatha, mighty hunter, greatly daring. See, my bow is at the ready. See, I have a little quiver. What? Why have I a little quiver? Mighty hunter got the wind up. Got the wind up good and proper, shaking like a
bull. All right, all right.
And from now on, stop talking in verse. Daddy be balmy. Let us proceed to the first test. Marksmanship. See you, Hiawatha. On the uppermost branch of the tall pine, 400 paces beyond the totem pole, sits a blue jay. Take a bow and arrow and shoot off its third tail feather.
Third tail feather. Right. Oh, that's a pity. A near miss, I'm afraid.
Where did the arrow go?
Through me foot.
Look, Hiawatha, I don't want to discourage you, but, speaking as a Red Indian of some standing, I'd feel much happier if you were on the cowboy's side.
Yes, but,
I mean...
Please understand, Sitting Jim,
it's not as if you did all that well in the first part of the exam. You know, the smoke signals. Remember?
Yes.
With the campfire and my blanket...
I did apologize, Sitting Jim.
You did apologize. But what's an apology? It was Sitting Jim who had to explain to his squaw where the dirty great scorch mark came from. I'm sorry, Hiawatha. I don't think you're ready to be a brave. As head of the selection board, I must fail you.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry, Hiawatha. I'm not changing my mind. I'm standing pat.
I thought you were Sitting Jim. I thought...
Of course, that sort of thing doesn't really enhance your chances either.
All right, tribe. Initiation's been scrubbed. Take your partners for an excuse me war dance. Wars on the inside, braves on the outside.
So unhappy Hiawatha comes to find me in the forest. Me, his sweetheart, Minnehaha. Minnehaha's what my name is. Should have just been christened Minnie, but the vicar got the giggles. Now I wait for Hiawatha as he calls me through the forest. Through the forest, calls my name out loud and clearly. Here, Hiawatha. Oh, Hiawatha, what news?
They failed me, Minnehaha, in front of the whole tribe. Was my face red?
We can't be married. And the law of the tribe states that any attractive maiden unwed at the age of 18 automatically becomes the property of Sitting Jim.
But such a law is cruel. Who made such a cruel law?
Sitting Jim. Hiawatha, there are but 2 moons before my 18th birthday, and already my parents are saying it is meet I should marry.
But not that much meat. Not 16 stone of Jim. So that is why he would not make me a brave.
Of course that is why. Everyone knows you are a mighty hunter, keen of eye and flat of feet.
Fleet of foot. Oh. Then I will show Sitting Jim such prowess that he cannot deny me my brave certificate. What can I shoot? Look yonder, through the bushes. See, a buffalo.
Oh, but how?
Its back is towards us. Where's my bow and arrow? Ah.
I'm wounded! Help! It hurts! Stop the show! Is there a medicine man in the wigwam? Seize him, brave!
So they seized poor Hiawatha. To the totem pole they bound him. Bound him with a sort of song thing, while the warriors held a sing-song. Sitting Jim advanced with hatchet.
Tomahawk won't fit the meter.
Seized the head of Hiawatha. Chanted song that sung for scalping.
Just a little bit off the top for me, honey.
Sitting Jim, no, spare his life.
No, Minnehaha, not after where that arrow of his landed. For the next 2 moons, Sitting Jim will be Standing Jim. He must die. Now, where'd I put me tomahawk?
I have it.
Hey, you.
Hiawatha will escape you yet, Phoebe. One slug, and he's free. Quick, Hiawatha, flee with me.
After him, brave.
It's no use, Hiawatha. We can run no further. We have come to... And I'm sure the tribe are closing in on us. Listen. The cry of a mating owl. And it was answered from the other side. Oh, Hiawatha, do you think they'll hold off until dawn?
It's hard to say with owls. It's hopeless. There is no escape.
Well, there they are, on the edge of the cliff. Be platoon, bows and arrows at the aim. Don't shoot till you see the white of his shift.
Minnie, don't stay with me. Move away, lest a stray arrow hit you in the ha-ha.
No, my Indian lover. If you are to die, then I shall die with you. Give me your hand. We'll both leap into the foaming torrents beneath. Then we shall be together forever in the happy hunting ground.
Very well. Hyde Park, here we come.
Oh, what have I done? They've leapt to their doom. Gather round me, oh Kipperfeet. Last verse coming up. Stop your whoops, dearie. Us because of Jim's injustice. Perished brave young Hiawatha. Perished lovely Minnehaha, hand in hand into the river. But their leap will live in legend, and their love be ever with us. For we'll hear their ghostly voices, calling, calling, across the canyon, ever calling to each other.
Hiya, Minnie!
Hiya, Wapa!
And a request from the augmented BBC review orchestra bring our recorded show to a close. Those involved were Dick Bentley and Professor Jimmy Edwards, encouraged by Wallace Eaton, Elmer Cogan, June Whitfield, and the keynote. The announcer was David Dunhill. Frank Muir and Dennis Norton wrote the script, and the program was produced by Charles Maxwell. We all invite you to tune in again next week and...